Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Today, we are all in for such a treat. We are coming to you live from Nauvoo, Alabama, with the amazing Nigel Wallace and the incomparable Jay Wolf as my special guest right here live from Hope Heals Camp.
Yeah.
Nigel, if you do not know of Nigel Wallace, you should. Nigel is an incredible all the things. Truly a artist in every sense of the word, a communicator, speaker, writer, preacher, teacher, all the things. And here at Hope Heals Camp, he has played many amazing roles, most recently our pastor to our volunteers, which is super important, and this year our pastor to all youth, which is just amazing, both youth with disabilities on the outside and inside. And as I can attest, having a 15-year-old,
you're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah,
thank you. I'm gonna play this back on like the hard days, you know, and just like listen to that intro one more time.
Oh, please
Very
do.
Very grateful. That's Thank you so one. Much. So sweet.
We love you. You're like our much cooler younger brother.
Wow. Yeah.
We just want to be around.
I'll take that. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're the best.
And I believe that. And I feel that. It's been cool, the journey of a simple conversation here and then a little share there. And I think that so many of us are on the fringe, you know, of something really special. And it could be as simple as one conversation or one thing that we share. And then it creates like what will come to be like a lifelong friendship, you know. And I think that's the essence of really what exists here at camp, right? You hear stories all day long about people who have just, we seen one post or we saw one clip of something that Catherine shared when she was teaching at a conference or she came to our church. And then you got lifers at Hope Hills Camp.
It's crazy. I love when people have come and seen that there's just this different universe.
Truly.
This ecosystem that just radically comes alive super quickly, and it's like electrifying.
Yeah.
And somehow gathering a group of people with disabilities on the outside doesn't necessarily seem like it would be like this almost like frenetic, like exciting, magical thing. And it's this just crazy sacred space, which brings me to my first question to ask you about. Obviously, you're into kind of a deep study of humanity, all things that it means to live in our bodies and be in the world. And I'd love to hear you speak about why, Nigel? Why do you write and speak so beautifully about hope for humanity, your love for humanity, the need for community? You just, you've got this essence of Hope Heals Camp all over you, and it's glorious.
Very sweet. Thank you for saying that. And this question, I didn't think I would get emotional this quick on the podcast.
Come on.
But
don't bother me, please.
Literally, before I walked upstairs from my room, I read a study that was released about where I'm from. And it was the top 50 or the top 25 counties in the country, in the United States, that deal with depression or deaths of despair. And the county that I'm from is number one on that list.
Oh, my gosh.
And literally just read this.
West Virginia.
Yes, I'm from Logan County, West Virginia. And I just grew up seeing a lot of poverty. I grew up seeing a lot of grief, unprocessed grief, unhealed hurts. And just growing up in the environment where it was decorated, though. You couldn't really tell that people were struggling, but everybody was struggling in their own little way, which is the reality of humanity, right?
For
to
sure.
live is to
yes.
struggle and suffer. And so I think that for me, I didn't really know how to process that, but I felt it really early. And so I was very embodied at an early age of really just being able to feel and understand my emotions. And the older that I got, I realized the speciality really of sensitivity. And I really feel like the Lord just blessed me with friends who would give me little things like a journal here or a piece of wisdom, an article here. And then I was discipled when I was in college by this guy named Gerhard, who was with Campus Crusade. And he literally would come and get me every week from my freshman year to my senior year. And we would go get coffee or we would go have a meal. We'd go to the park. And he had no agenda outside of just showing me the tangible love of God.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
And it was through that process that I began to kind of like find avenues to express the things that I'd always felt inside of me. And adulthood really kind of walked me into a space of, okay, you've got feelings for this, but do you have language for it? Do you have creative outlets? And that's kind of when I started writing. It started as like a, you know, open mic night when I was in college processing like a relationship or a breakup. And then it turned into more devotional style content. And then it was like poetry here and an essay or a think piece here, visual arts. And now it's film and all these wonderful other avenues. But I'm in love with the human experience because I don't think that there's anything more special than to be created. It's a privilege to know that the odds of being born are just astronomically, like for you to be here now is such a blessing. And I do believe that, you know, as it tells us in Genesis 1:26-27, that we are all created in the image of God and his likeness. And I see it so beautifully expressed in people who are experiencing disabilities and people who are Black and people who are white, Asian, across the board, culturally, societally, racially, we all have something to contribute to the world. But before we even get to the contribution, there's a call to just realize that we're sons and daughters first. And in this climate and society now where everybody's rushing to be seen and known and we want tangible expression of people telling us that they see us and they know us and we don't like delayed gratification. I think that the most beautiful form of gratification comes from realizing that your human embodiment is such a gift from God and your expression of his likeness is nobody can do it the way that you do.
Wow.
So I've really taken that to heart and kind of ran with it in all things creative and communication and arts and all the things, which we'll get to. But yeah, I love being a human. I love the human experience. And we're living in like a really sad time, you know, and a really hard time. And being in your body can be a really hard thing right now. And I'm just trying to create things and express things to help people enjoy their experience in their body, you know.
You are a Renaissance man in that way. And it's really cool to just see all the different mediums that you express. As you said, how you have sensed the pain of what it means to be alive.
Yeah.
And also the longing for a hope to keep on living.
Absolutely.
Right? And we love watching you and how God has uniquely suited you to create in this world.
Yeah.
And to spark that hope in all who witness what you're putting out into the world. So keep doing it. We're so proud of you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so curious about the difference in your creative mind between creativity and artistry.
Yeah. Hmm. So I believe that we're all inherently creative. You got people at Hope Hills Camp right now that literally came from all across America and even people from Canada.
I know.
And they created.
And the United Kingdom.
And the UK too, from across the pond. They did it. But how cool is that, that each and every person had to create in their mind a way logistically to get here. That's creativity.
Yeah.
That's
the way that, you know, you decorate your oatmeal when you go through Doug, you know, and you put blueberries and strawberries and maybe some granola and cinnamon because that's how I like to do mine, you know. That's creativity. Like it's so creativity is so simple and inherent. And but the privilege of what it is to express as an artist is being able to utilize that creativity to see the depth of story and be able to express it. And a lot of people have asked me recently where my, you know, drive or ambition comes from or what my quote unquote gifts are. And I used to say creativity and communication, but I think those are just the two avenues through which things are expressed the most. I think that my gift and the gift a lot of people have is articulation, being able to envision a space in Alabama or somewhere else for an entire community of people experiencing the same reality and take that and be like, okay, we got to put some legs to this thing. We have to be able to build it up and put some scaffolding, if you will, to be able to design it and make it manifest in reality. And man, to have the gift of articulation and artistry, it is such a rare thing. But it's such a beautiful thing to almost like optimize your creativity to help other people see the story in, you know, the experience every day.
I love that. We, I think part of the connect too, when we were thinking about Hope Heals Camp and who we wanted to participate with us and kind of co-create with us in this space, again, people who we had learned from, found healing through their own work, through their own risking of things to put into the world with their own story vulnerably shared. You write about humanity's table. And what's interesting, and I don't know what it says about us, but the first image we had when we thought about this community of Hope Heals Camp 8 years ago was of a table.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because we like to eat. That's also a good thing.
We met in the cafeteria.
We did. It's kind of a theme. That's awesome. And after Catherine's stroke, she didn't eat for a year. And so it just, it matters to us that the practice of just ordinary gathering to be nourished in the most basic ways, but how something so ordinary is so extraordinarily. Profound in terms of being seen as a human being in community, being nourished by each other's presence and stories around a table.
Wonderful.
And I think that when we saw you use that language of sitting at humanity's table, it just like
it connected
and combined. Yes. Talk to us about communion and community around the table, what that looks like for you, why it matters.
Yeah, I grew up in, and not to personalize this, but just to kind of flesh out that idea.
No, we love the personalization. Well, okay.
It's universal.
Because we all have a story.
Absolutely. I grew up in this really, so I'm millennial. I'm about to turn 30 in a couple months. And the home and time that I lived in was a really unique time where we didn't really share a lot of meals at the dinner table together. And that's no knock on my parents. It's just kind of like, you know, every family builds their traditions. Sometimes we would gather in front of a TV with our plates and watch Sunday night football. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'd disperse into our own rooms. That just was a thing. But then I would go to like my friends' homes and I would notice that it wasn't just like a place that, you know, you put out the cutlery and the napkins and stuff. It's like people actually ate at the dinner table. And I was on an inbound flight one day. I think it was maybe from Florida to Atlanta. And I was reading one of my favorite authors, Kurt Vonnegut, which I love all of his work, most of his work. And he was just talking about how the necessity of human beings, especially when it comes to marriage, is that many people undo I do their commitment because they don't have enough people. So when they're expressing their grievance to their partner, they're saying essentially, you're not enough people for me. So he was talking about how it's so important to have extended family. So when things aren't necessarily going right, in at least you got a place to express and talk about your pain and talk about your grief. And so I kind of tied that concept into the table from my childhood home. It's like we would take our chairs in the rooms when friends would come over and play video games, and then we'd take them back, but we wouldn't share meals there. I think there was always like a deep yearning inside of me to just have a space to share with other people intentionally, where you can, you know, laugh and talk over a really great, you know, bowl of pasta, and then do it up with dessert at the beginning of the meal or the end, because we don't wait to
That's right. That's right. Love it. Yes.
And so, man, this the idea of communion and just being able to intimately express, this is by definition what communion is before we get to the bread and wine, is just the interchanging, exchanging of your thoughts and feelings on an intimate level, be that it's with a human being or with God. And understanding that, you know, there are ways for us to do communion every day. And when we're intentional about realizing that every moment can be communion, our walk looks drastically different than waiting around on Sunday to get to the end of the liturgy and share communion together and have the priest or the pastor bless you, you know, with peace as you exit. And so I think that camp really for me has given me a space to really explore what communion looks like. And realize that you don't really need a shared commonality to commune with people. You just need vulnerability and the building of trust and friendship like this. And then the communion gets all the more deeper and you're able to see the expression of another individual's likeness.
Yes, right, right.
As you have that conversation and you spend more time, you see that the world's a lot smaller than you realize previously, and there are a lot more shared commonalities the closer that you get with people.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, the unity kind of is uncovered, right? But if we wait to just commune with those who already are like us or think like us or who we know have similar stories, then we're really missing the depth of what is possible when we gather on the table together and find, oh my gosh, me too. I had no idea.
I think one of the reasons Hope Hills Camp has this weird electrifying magic is that it's not all same diagnosis.
Yes.
Everybody's got something different going on.
Absolutely.
It's all ages, all stages, all the kinds of disability. I think they're over 70. Over the 3 weeks of Hope Hills Camp, we will have over 70 unique diagnoses.
I couldn't even name them, honestly.
But that's kind of wild. The beauty, because they're sitting down at a table together.
Yeah.
And nobody's got the same story.
And what also is interesting, because it's not just one region, this is not that we happen to be in Alabama. We live in Atlanta, but the camp is in Alabama. Mm-hmm. When we gather people who are looking for God together and who are trying to follow the way of Jesus, but they're from maybe the UK or they're maybe they're, you know, they're
Massachusetts,
you know, their ecumenical expressions are almost as varied as a diagnosis here, which is really something we didn't even kind of think of. We're just like, hey, let's all come here and do this thing. And when we're here, we realize, oh my gosh, you're following Jesus, but it looks different in some ways.
And it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And like your region, your culture, your story, your background have led you kind of to a different place, but we're actually, it's leading us to each other too. And it's profound. But I love how you read through all the different experiences of what it means to be a person of faith, the struggles and the doubts and the longings and the looking for it all. Tell us a little bit about your kind of your faith journey and how you even creativity intersects that for you today.
Yeah. So I grew up, I had a really interesting faith experience as a child because there were so many different church cultural expressions in the county that I lived in. So I was very fortunate, I think, in my upbringing so I grew up in a Southern Baptist church. But I also got to see Pentecostal expression, also had the Black church experience, which is very unique and specific to the region that I live in as well. I also got to see just some really hard takes on faith that were just like so rigid and there was no room for questions and all the answers were in the Bible and it was easy to understand. And I was like, hey, everybody, let's just take a break for a second and like talk some real. And and then the whataboutism started to occur. So when you would start asking questions, people would ask you to not ask those questions and take it up with God or pray it away and all the, you know, all the expressions that just come from people being human and not having the answers, but wanting to have clarity.
Be sweet and obey.
Yeah, be sweet and obey. And it's like, no, because I have a rebel spirit, but God can use this too, right?
Well,
and so, for me, I think that the older that I got, the more real my faith became. Because I think one of the things about kind of living in the Bible Belt and having like the Southern Christian experience is that, like, you know, we're saved because grandma prays.
Right.
And me and mom go to church. And it really don't matter what happens outside of the walls as long as our hands are in the air and we're praising him in the church. And that became problematic for me over time. Because I realized that I'm like out here sinning on the weekdays and then I'd be trying to get my life together for like 2 hours or 4 hours if we ain't having a Black church experience on Sunday. Right. And so I think the older that I've gotten, the more I've become comfortable realizing that, you know, the book of Psalms is a lengthy book. And when you look through at the way things are expressed, the authors are angry. And they're depressed and they're weeping and they're grieving and they're happy and they're joyful and they're dancing, but there's mourning, there's sadness, there's dark. And so for the full spectrum of emotions and questions, I can feel how I feel and think what I think as long as I know what I know. Mm. Christ is King. He's died. He's risen. I died with him. I got up with him. He coming back.
Yeah.
And so once I was able to kind of stand and solidify that foundation of knowing what I knew, I became more, I think, free to ask those questions and live in the mystery of my faith. And that's a really sweet place to live when you don't have all the answers. That means that there's more exploration in your faith to go and find what you're looking for in Christ. And and to create a more inclusive environment for people who don't necessarily believe. And how do we engage? You know, we don't put them on the margins of society or culture just because they don't think or believe the way we do. I'm commissioned to love. So as long as I'm actively attempting to know him and make him known and understanding how to express his love to me, I can understand how to express it to others too. And I think there's such a redemptive moment that we're sitting in right now in society and culture where the credibility that the church has lost can be redeemed, but it starts with us.
Right.
You know, being able to take a redemptive love to a people who have been hurt by, you know, what we've done, you know, so.
It happens around tables too.
It all connects. You know, Nigel, I think the first time, I mean, not the first time, but one of the early times when I was like, wait, I love Nigel Wallace was when you quoted Barbara Brown Taylor.
Yeah, that's my girl.
Who, like, I love Barbara Brown Taylor's work. I love, and should I quote it? I'm sure I probably have before on this podcast, but it bears repeating. New life starts in the dark, whether it's a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb, it all starts in the dark. And her book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, somehow I didn't grow up, maybe I just missed it, but I grew up more with a solar Christianity experience, which I think most of us did, honestly. And her work about lunar Christianity has moved me very, sacred. Beautiful. And the darkness is just this fertile ground. It's kind of just been a paradigm shift for me in my adult life and deeply informed my response to the stroke. And honestly, we made it our theme of camp last year. It's like a big, big thing around Hope Hills Camp is that beautiful truth of Isaiah 45:3 that he gives hidden treasure in darkness. And yeah, I feel like you get that. And that's so cool. You. And you love BBT.
I love her.
Okay, this is a turn a little bit, but you share something, speaking of communion, around tables. We all three share a love for coffee. A deep, deep, deep love for coffee. And we're opening a coffee shop. Which we hope you will be a regular.
Absolutely.
And but tell us about how you started to love coffee, but also like what is the ritual of coffee? You don't just kind of go hit your Keurig pop. Like tell us about like what sort of that practice.
Well, I think just a big part of, you know, believing in Jesus is loving coffee too, because like how can you, like we run on Jesus, but we definitely run on coffee.
I think I'm with you there fully. Yeah, I hear you. Cheers.
Well, I kind of have at the bottom of my cup, but I cheers you in the spirit.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, I think that coffee for me is there's something so beautiful and communal about the coffee experience. A lot of people now with like work from home culture, you know, they either have an office to go to or they can work from the desk or their couch or however, you know, you practice. But then coffee shops have kind of become like the third space. And there is a communal element to walking into a coffee shop and the barista knowing your name and, you know, knowing what, you know, hey, how you doing today or liking what you got on. And there is something about confidence and charisma and community that exists in the third space that is a coffee shop. There's nothing better than, you know, on Wednesday and Thursdays when I walk into the coffee shops that I frequent and I see the people working and I'm like, man, it's like a little hint of dopamine. And then I walk down the street to the restaurant and I get my two chicken empanadas with chimichurri sauce, you know, and I see the owners and the chefs and they, what's up? How's your week? Give me a hug. I love coffee because it's something that really binds people together. It's a really low hanging fruit of shared commonality between people. And it's great for you to appreciate the slow sip, you know, in your cup or fast sip. I don't know. It's something that I feel like I can't live without. I wouldn't call it addiction. I would call it a deep, yearning and love and desire.
Yeah, affection, for yeah.
Interdependence.
Yeah, interdependence, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think that...
That's codependent, but healthy.
Okay. I'll take that. I'll take that healthy codependence.
I love that, Nigel. Nigel, we have to wrap up.
Yeah.
But we have to ask you what we ask everybody on the Good Heart Story podcast, based on this notion that I think you subscribe to, that life is never one note. Mm-hmm. It is good and hard at the very same time in each and every one of our stories. Yeah. So we would love to hear from you. What is good in your story? What is hard in your story? Mm-hmm. And how do you live in the tension of both of those realities at the very same time?
That's incredible. What's good is that I do, I have hope. And I'm not even trying to use it as like a, you know, cliche.
I know you're not, but I do love that answer.
Yeah, I really do. You know, a lot of people don't right now, and I count it a blessing. You know, I take it a step further and say that I've got people who love me and people who pray for me, and I've got friends and I've got community and I've got spaces where I know I'm seen and known and loved, mm-hmm. and that's what's good. What's hard, I think I'm in a season of just waiting and being patient with the promises of God that He's spoken specifically to my story. And holding on to that promise can be real hard sometimes, and it can be draining and defeating, and, you know, you lose sleep sometimes, you get angry and you're upset, but, you know, again, life is not one note. It's good and hard, so that's the hard, and I think holding the tension is knowing that life is an oscillation. Mm. It goes up and down and all around, and I think that I've learned that two things can be true at once. Mm. And living in the tension of the two things being good at once is just exploring the mystery of faith. And I don't know what God is doing or when He's doing or where He's doing it. I'll know when it's being done and I'm experiencing it. But in between, I've got to wait well and believe. And it doesn't mean that I doubt, that I don't doubt sometimes or that I have a hard time believing and I don't need help with my faith. But living in the mystery of faith and knowing that there's joy there is how I handle the tension.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
We'll wait with you.
Love
you. Yeah. You wait with us.
Yeah. I'll wait right here with you.
Well, as long this as we is got glorious. Coffee. And back to what's good in your life, you've got two of those people that are bringing that goodness to you sitting right in front of you.
Absolutely. I love you.
Nigel,
so much.
We love you too. Tell all of our listeners where they can find you, what you're up to.
You can find me on all platforms at Nigel Darius. Nigel Darius. Darius is my middle name. But I love it. Nigel Darius, NigelDarius. Mm-hmm. I have a book that's out right now. It's called Fragments and Finality. You can find it NigelDarius.com. It's just a book that explores introspection and how it ties into our identity. Yeah, I'm working on some other cool stuff, too, that we could talk about in the near future. Yeah.
But, good.
But yeah. Keep it coming.
Yeah,
yeah, you're prolific. I love it.
Love this. Thanks, love y'all. This is wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on the Good Heart Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Heart Story Podcast is a production of Good Heart Story, LLC. It is produced by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. We are with you and for you, friends.